I'm James Rose, and today's guest is Alan Fitzgerald. This is someone who's been in the accounting and the tech sector for a long time, since Windows 3.1, by my calculations. He's an absolute master of accounting tech, and more importantly, memes on LinkedIn. He's got a lot of experience helping firms implement technology. So this is a really good chat. We talk about accounting tech, obviously, why tech adoption often fails, how to stop that happening, three things that need to be true for change in process or tech to occur in your firm, how to make better buying decisions, measuring value beyond the hype, and more topics. With that, I bring you Alan Fitzgerald.
Mate, Alan, thank you for joining me today.
James, a pleasure.
Let's start with a little bit about, just for people that don't know who you are, like, who are you, man? What do you do?
Alan Fitzgerald is my name. I have been in technology for about, 1992? So it's a long time ago, 36, 37 years. I have been in accounting technology since 1999. And about 10 years ago, my accountant sat me down. He said, I want you to quit everything, and I want you to create a company to help other accounting firms navigate their technologies. So I help firms navigate the quagmire of technology solutions.
There you go. In a nutshell. I love the choice of words, which I would expect nothing less from you. I feel like that is one of your specialties, memes and expressing oneself. Unlike me, I'm very bad at words. Am I right in saying that you typically work with bigger firms?
Generally, yes. Although in saying that, I do. There's a great expression, we just ascend the elevator back down again. So, and that's where smaller firms can also contact me and get some hints and tips on their tech stacks. But my skill sets really are in the larger end of town, and that's up to and including the Big Four. So I've done projects for the Big Four because, amazingly, they don't know what they don't know. And so they like to get in external parties in to give them a hand.
Tell me how the tech implementations differ from the small ones to the big ones. Like, do big companies have like more options, less options? You know, like, what are the biggest differences?
In today's market, the smaller firms have an incredible advantage because they can be significantly more nimble than their peers. And what I mean by that is, particularly over the last 5 years, there's been a development within cloud software which enables firms to plug and play. And that plug and play is, to a great extent, 90% foolproof. But for the larger firms, there's more moving parts. And when there's more moving parts, then the change management becomes an issue. And that change management process has to be carefully managed. And that's probably the biggest difference, is that the smaller firms are like the speedboat out on the harbor, and the big firms are like the container ships. One can turn on a dime, and the other one has to take 4 days to turn. So it's
Do you think, this is just coming from personal experience, and I want to know if you've seen this as well, but do you think like some small firms think they're the big ship and that it's going to take a long time to implement things when it really isn't?
Look, I often use this, and I preface this by saying my brother came up with this line, which is, nobody likes a spontaneous accountant. And and part of that is the overthinking of the process. Now, I've just actually completed an interview for In the Black, and a very similar question came out, because the statement that the interviewer made to me was that, based on, I think it was CPA's research, there's something like 40 or 49% of firms are still using older technologies. And he said, why is that so? And I said, because it works. Mm-hmm. I said, you know, if, so long as, you know, it mightn't be the best process, but if you can get work out the door, you can get invoices, the clients are still coming in, it might be a horrendously ugly process, but the work still gets out the door, and the staff mightn't be happy about it, but they're used to the tools, it's familiar, and there is a, let's invert a commas, a smooth process. Mm-hmm. And that's probably the biggest challenge for a lot of these newer vendors coming into the market, where they go to a firm and say, oh, it's great, guys, no, we can increase your revenues by 15%. And the firm will sit back and go, it's not worth my while. And it in a lot of instances, it literally isn't worth their while. And I've actually coached a lot of, one of the things that I do is coach vendors, if they approach me, of course, for a substantial fee, I'll add. But
all right, I'll write that off then.
You want to write that one off? So, but it was a, like, I'll give you an example. I did one with a firm a couple of months ago, and I asked can you show me how you present the product? And they presented the product, and I said, stop. Under no circumstances ever present a product like that to me again. And I said, this is how you should present it.
Are they accountants or developers?
A mixture of the two.
Yeah, I honestly think that like, there's a lot of similarities. Because I'm a engineer back in the day, right? And it took me a long time to unlearn selling by features. You know, it's like this is all it is. Like, this is what it does. You know, you want to show the UI. You want to show certain things that aren't necessarily what the person on the other end wants to see.
Yeah.
Very familiar with that. Yeah. I think it's funny you're talking about this, how, like, you know, a lot of times it's the process is fine as it is, right? They don't need tech. Because I feel like that's something I see you write on LinkedIn about a lot, is almost like you have a real issue with people being sold stuff that they don't need.
Mm-hmm.
This seems pretty regular. So yeah, like what's going on there? Like, because that seems to be like two opposites, right? People don't want to move, but then sometimes, are these just two different firms? Some are like, oh, they always want the new shiny thing and they get sold into anything. And the other one is just like, nah, we're good. Are these like two different firms, or is sometimes the same person?
Well, I think it's fair to say that most accounting firms and the partners and people that do the jobs are quite binary. So it's black, white, it's right or it's wrong. And so therefore, when it comes to a decision-making process, it's often very difficult for a binary thinker to accept nebulous concepts, right? So, oh, you will be able to do this, or you could do this, or you can do this. It's kind of like, well, that's all coulda, woulda, shoulda, but in reverse. I'm more comfortable in going, I can see it, I can touch it, I can smell it, I can scratch it, yeah, I can poke it, right? So, because they generally live most of their existence, so to speak, in a historical context. And so these salespeople come in and go, oh my God, we can do this for you. And they sit back and they go, but I don't understand what that is. I can't get a grasp as to what that is, but I'm very comfortable in the world that I'm in. And so unless it's absolutely earth shattering, there are some firms that are, yeah, bang, we need this, because nobody's ever spoken to us in that frame or framed it like that to us before. So now we're interested, uh-oh, bright, shiny object. And so therefore it becomes that looks really interesting, and it sometimes can divert the where the firm is actually going to. So what a firm approached me a couple of weeks ago, we did a session, I opened up their eyes to some of the stuff that they could do. And then they gave me a call today saying, oh, by the way, we're doing this. Ooh, left field. It's like, okay, no, pull that back in, guard, pull it back in, let's rein that in, and then, you know, we'll, oh yeah, that makes sense, but it looks really good. Yeah, calm down, there's some other things that might be better, but let's just pull it back and bring it back to basics. And that, I guess that's one of the point, bringing it back to basics. Nobody in any environment ever says let's go back to complexity when there's challenges. They always say let's go back to basics. And part of the challenge from an accounting firm's perspective is they're very process-driven, but then when they look at changing software platforms or changing things, they generally go, well, we have a process, we know the process works, so we'll just push that process into the new software. That doesn't work, because they designed their original process based on the constraints and limitations of the platforms that they were using. And there's a reason why the smaller firms are shying away from the old Maya, the old APS, and the old Handysoft, is because the newer generations of softwares like your Xeros, QuickBooks, et cetera, do things in it's the same functions, but they do things in a different way that is suddenly a hell of a lot more to be able to manage. But it also then opens up to this ecosystem which says, if you've got a problem in that particular area, like getting information from clients, boys are boys, you should be taking a look at contents there. Because not only is contents there, and this isn't a divertisement, but this is effectively how I talk to firms. If you have a challenge getting information back, this solves it. We didn't even know that was possible. Yeah, well, it's solvable, because someone, if you think you've got a problem as an accounting firm, someone has invariably found the solution. They might be five different variants of that, how to fix that problem. So let's sit down and work out which one is actually going to be better for you, rather than you just going, oh, there's five, oh, I'll just buy that one. And it may be the wrong one.
I love that you brought this up, this whole, like, you know, trying to bring the existing process to the new software, because yeah, that is something we see quite a lot. Mm. You know, people, and this is totally understandable that, like, you have a way of doing things, you want to be able to do that in the new software, but things have been built in different ways, right? Like the amount of preconceptions people have when mm-hmm. they come to Content Snare, sometimes it's like, oh, our forms tool, like they've been using, I don't know, Jotform or something, and it's like they've got it in their head that it's like a form, it's all done at once and it's submitted at the end, and you have to explain that no, this is like a back and forth process, it's a live living thing, you know. And so it's not even necessarily the process, it's even just the preconceived notions of what a tool in a certain category does.
Yeah,
I imagine people are, you know, arriving with. Now, something you said quite a way back that I think is worth digging into is, like, sometimes firms won't sign up for something, you know, the product comes along, you said, you know, we can save 15% of your revenue, and they said no, you know, like, we don't need to do that. Like, how should firms make decisions in this case? Because I mean, 15, let's say that's not a BS claim, right? Yep. And it is, like, 15% of revenue sounds like, you know, extra revenue sounds great, but, you know, let's say it's not a, like, some crap claim that the vendor's made. Like, how should these decisions be made? Like, why is that a bad decision to make in that case?
Well, the challenge with an accounting firm in particular, certainly these days, is that it's never been as busy as it has been. It is the work is just insane. It's just compounding constantly. And so the challenge is from a changing to a different vendor, unless something fundamental is broken, like seriously fundamental, there's three things that happen to have any kind of change effect. One is that you need motivation to make a change, you need the ability to make a change, and you need a trigger event, right? Unless those three things happen simultaneously, change is not going to happen. So if 40, whatever the percentage is, are kind of going, you know what? It's not broken, right? To use those three things, a trigger event of 15% in the scheme of things, yeah, really? Considering the potential disruption, the change management, the client, yeah, upsetting clients, or whatever, this perceived notion of if we get it wrong, we're just going to blow up the whole system. And so they're more reluctant to make a change because it's easier for them to go, you know what, we're not actually going to make that change. So even the waving a 15% improvement on the bottom line is not necessarily a sufficient enough trigger event. Your tax not functioning or your practice management blowing up, that's a trigger event. And then they're motivated, then they've got the ability, then they'll make a change.
Yeah, I have noticed that. Like, sometimes it is this really, like, frustration point when people are coming to Content Snare, and, like, obviously they're the quote-unquote easiest sales because it's like, that we're just done with this, right?
Yep.
But I guess the, you know, something you were so talking about there is, like, the work's always coming in and everyone's so busy, but I feel like that's what a lot of tools are offering is mm-hmm. to help remedy that, right? And to actually save time. I always thought it was, like, much harder to sell saving time than it is to sell more revenue or more profit.
Yep. Right?
But I feel like in accounting that almost may be different because everyone's so busy and so done. But I've always joked that, like, some people are just too busy to save time.
Exactly.
It requires amount of time to implement. How does this get navigated?
Look, my favorite example of that was I spent a big chunk of my career in corporate tax software. So the stratospheric world of corporate tax. And I remember doing a demonstration to a manager in a firm in Sydney where I had the relationship with the partner, and the partner, this is the corporate tax partner in the firm, and he obviously voluntold the manager to entertain Fitzy for an hour. And I went through the process of, and I got this. You could sense straight away that bloke just didn't want to be there, wanted to be back at his desk, blah, blah, blah. And I went through the process of the demonstration, and then I said, because I knew this would get him, and I said, oh, and we do this, and I pressed a button. He started to cry. And the reason why he started to cry, because I asked him, are you okay? Because I'm a sensitive new age guy. He said, I've just spent 3 days doing that, and you've just done it in 30 seconds. Now, they became a client that day. And it's to your point about at what point does someone go, I have to have that piece of software. And at when I was selling this particular piece of software, you could tell from the gasps in the audience, like on demos, literal gasps from people going, holy, we have to have this. And it went down to that was the trigger. Up until that point, it's just another piece of tech software. Who gives one? The outputs are predetermined by the ATO. We've got no control over that. It's how you get from literally not A to Z, but A to ATO. And then there was so many smarts built into this tool, particularly for those corporate entities, that when we didn't even show half of the capabilities, we would show them the extra bells and whistles. And the bells and whistles that delivered to them the time saving. So it was literally, I think it was the average calculation was 10 hours for every entity that they used this on was just automated. Now that's not 10 hours of time saving, that's 10 hours that would have previously been written off that could now still be charged. It's also 10 hours that they could bill another client. So effectively they were getting 20 hours of additional time in their billings.
So this, like, I think it totally makes sense when you have that moment, right? When you're looking at software and you go, damn, like the gasp moment that you're describing there. I feel like that's not all that common though, right?
No.
Back to the sort of original thing is, how do you make decisions then? Like how should firms approach the decision-making process if there isn't this really obvious thing? And you know, if it's a 15% time saving, yeah, let's say, and you'll run off your feet, that should be quite attractive, but it's probably not enough to make people move, right? And so, yeah. So how should a firm owner approach that?
The ways that firms generally buy software, and this is generally, so I'm gonna sweeping generalization here, is that the boss makes the buying decision. Generally the way that it's made, right? The boss, when they buy software, and there's an iceberg analogy on this. So the tip of the iceberg, the boss gets to talk to the sales guys. The sales guys go, wow, this is great. The boss goes, oh yeah, I'll have me some of that. And then rolls out a piece of software and the team down below go, this is great, but it isn't actually what we need, right? And it comes down to nobody will challenge the decision that the boss has made because that's a career limiting conversation to have. I did an Ask Me Anything session with a large firm a couple of months ago, and part of the reason that they got me in was that they wanted me to present to the board, and they knew that if they were to deliver the news that I was invariably going to be delivering to them, that they would be sacked.
Wow.
But the board needed to hear this information because the systems that some of them had purchased were woefully inadequate. And there was, I'll give you a great, you're in marketing, you'll love it. You'll love it and you'll hate it. Mm-hmm. In this Ask Me Anything session, there was about 30 mixture of partners, managers, supervisors, staff, etc. And they're plucked from all the different divisions. The gal in marketing, I've forgotten what her name is, she said, when I said, what frustrations do you have with this system? She said, I spend 4 hours of my Sunday afternoon cleaning up data so that I can do my job the next week. And there was directors in the room that were horrified to hear that.
You know, based on what you're saying, it sounds to me like the team should be more involved in the actual buying decision.
Well, howdy doody. And that's exactly how I approach it. And this is where I try and coach people or coach firms to do that, is that don't buy software on a whim. You know, understand what the challenges are. And so part of my personal approach that I used to do years ago and have done for a long time is to talk to everyone from the front desk through to the director level. Because to my point earlier, nobody's going to criticize the boss. If James is the boss and he's bought a piece of software, nobody's going to criticize James. So James will go to the staff and go, oh, how are you finding that piece of software? Yeah, it's great, James. Thanks for that. It's great. Awesome. Yeah, it's great. Mm. And then they'll move on. And they, I wrote a post about this on LinkedIn, is that if you're responsible for buying software in your firm, everybody hates you.
It's funny because we've been on the side of this, right? Where, you know, we get NPS scores, right? So someone can rate like the software, and you'll see literally like the managers or whatever giving us really high scores, and then some of the team giving us a really low score. And I just know that that it's been forced on them with like no training or something like that, right? And then you just know there's been no buy-in. One of the most interesting stories I've had is we had a like a multidisciplinary firm using content scenarios for one department, and they then someone high up sort of tried to push it almost, or even push it, but just like recommend it into another department. And the manager in that team was really abrasive. They clearly didn't want to be on the demo. And like my theory is that they were quite involved in building the existing process and it felt attacked, right? Because that's honestly kind of what it felt like. And, you know, if these people were actually, it's like that classic thing in, I don't know, what's the field? Like when you're trying to help someone make it think it's their decision to do it, right? Like, I don't know if that's a leadership thing or whatever, but we're just people management in general. But it's like, don't go use it. Like you want them to go like, oh, make the decision themselves that this is like a good thing to do. Let's talk about discovery of tools. Where should people go to learn about what's possible and what's out there? Other than just talking to you.
Look, I'm going to say it's really bloody hard. And the reason why I say it's really bloody hard is that if you go to a conference, you're only getting the information from the people that have paid the money to be at the conference, right? It's not the be-all and end-all of the solutions universe. There are a lot of solutions in the marketplace that are bootstrapped, so they don't necessarily have the investor money going out there. There's a lot of solutions out in the marketplace that are squeaky wheels. You see them bloody everywhere, right? So it is very, very hard. I helped a firm out. It was quite funny. They approached me. I told them how much my fee was going to be. The managing partner went, I'm not paying that. We can do it ourselves. 3 months later, he came back and he went, actually, we did it all ourselves. We still don't know. We're still none the wiser. We have still no clue what it is. We don't know because it's not our forte. But it is very hard. Talking to other firms. However, I always caution about talking to other firms because what's good for the goose is not necessarily good for the gander, right? So you have a scenario where there was a lot of, I remember the legacy players like Myob and APS would always talk about people in the zero, had drunk the Kool-Aid. And the irony about that statement alone from these, let's call them dinosaurs, The statement alone on that is that someone who's moved to, say, a Xero or a QuickBooks or something like that hasn't drunk the Kool-Aid, right? Because they've gone, oh, there's potentially a better way, right? The ones that remain saying, oh, they've drunk the Kool-Aid, they've drunk the Kool-Aid because that vendor can do no wrong. And it's kind of like, you kind of, don't you? You're projecting here because you're not actually understanding what you're saying. And so there's a great line about a culture and religion and stuff like, which is go explore a different culture or go explore a different religion because you'll understand what shackles that you're bound by in your culture and your religion. The reality for anybody that's on APS, Elif, Handysoft, Myob AO, Myob AE is you're going to have to change. Right, those solutions are not going to be around forever, and probably going to be like sooner rather than later. So this is now the opportunity to go and explore the app eco space. And there are so many webinars. I mean, we're on a webinar/podcast now. There's CPAs, there's CANZ, there's the Tax Institute, there's the Bookkeeping Networks. That all the vendors hop onto LinkedIn, follow a couple of vendors, and you'll get invited to conferences. Like you've done, you and I've been on one where you've kindly invited me about AI. We discussed AI with a couple of providers into the marketplace. There is so much free stuff available to pique your interest to go, oh, actually, I'd like to learn more. That would be great if I could learn a bit more. I'll ask a few questions. And it goes from there.
I think this is like completely right how you're so talking, like you've got to try a few things. I think the resistance here is though is that it takes so much time. You know, and this is, for example, I remember looking at project management systems and I tried monday.com, right? Mm-hmm. But everyone was raving about it and it just did not fit the way we work, right? And I know we spoke about this already, like trying to come with an existing process, but it just didn't fit, right? The way we worked, it didn't fit the way my mind works, yet everyone raves about it. So I feel like this happens all the time.
I'm going to be really upset with you now. Because by virtue of the fact that you've mentioned monday.com, and I've just mentioned it there, it is going to suddenly miraculously appear. I don't know if you found that. As soon as you type in monday.com, it appears everywhere. And it's like, would you go away?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, there's no ads on this podcast. And yeah, so, and I'll maybe try not to host it on YouTube. So, because otherwise it'll end up with ads on it, right? Yeah. Oh man, there's a few companies like that that are just pervasive with ads. Oh, I just have no idea how it can possibly be ROI positive.
Drives me nuts.
But yeah, like, I guess my point is there though, like you actually have to take the time to go and plug into a couple of apps. Sometimes it'll take you like 5 minutes and you're like, nah, this doesn't work, right? And I don't know, I just think that's, while everyone's really busy, coming back to that, like it's too busy to save time, it's, you just have to, like, you've got to carve out. If you want the improvement, there is going to be this period of pain before you get it. Like, we go through this all the time, right? Like, and sometimes the pain is too much. For example, I would love to move our email marketing provider, but it is
like changing banks.
Yeah. Well, I feel like banks would be actually easier. It's way easier. Because, like, I do a lot of automation with Zapier and Make and whatever. Our CRM is touched by, like, probably 70 different automation flows. If not, that's outside. That's like Zapier and Make. Within that, there's probably 50 to 100 more automations just in there that have all got to be recreated in the new system. Like, that pain is too much, right? Like, I know we could do better with a new system, but I'm like, that's too much. But, you know, there are products that, you know, project management system, I feel like I could move fairly quickly because it's probably like 10 automations that I really care about. And that is something I would like to do. But yeah, again, it's like, it's working okay right now.
I think there's another avenue as well that every professional has to earn some kind of CPD points, right? So, and they're obliged to do it and they've got to fill in the forms at the end of the year. There are so many avenues, be they in-person conferences, be they webinars that you can join in on and so forth, that where you earn CPD points, that it's a very... it's a good way. Now, they have to actually be present. That's the most important thing. But it's being present at some of those conferences, and everybody loves a conference because it's great to catch up with peers. But that's a way of gaining information, or at least gaining a flavor of what some of the potential is, and then just going home and hopping on the computer and doing a search of saying, what's an equivalent of, or products similar to. Well, I've got a particularly interesting opportunity at the moment, and I looked at a product which is used by banks, right? I went, might be a little bit on the pricey side. I hopped onto ChatGPT and I said, I'm looking at this. It's another product that might be better suited at a lower price range, because their price range is like $500,000 a year. So, and like price range, and listed out a whole pile of opportunities. I went, great, okay. It's like several of them I knew, but it's always like, oh, that's interesting, good.
Yeah.
And so therefore, it's as I said in the webinar, there's never been a better time to be an accountant. There's literally never been a better time to be an accountant, because the software is at your fingertips rather than having to, you know, buy all this infrastructure to run this stuff. It's just there and you can plug and play. And you get free trials, stuff that was unheard of, you know, 10, 15 years ago. Free trials, and if you don't like it, then switch it off, but give the feedback as to why you switched it off, because they're going to come back and basically saying, well, if you're interested in the first place, we've made the changes, et cetera, that you may want to take another look at. So it's cheap, it's cost effective, it does the job, it does literally what it says on the tin, and as I said, it's never been easier.
Love it. I think we should leave it with that. I think I'm going to need to get you to come back someday and talk about change management, because that seems like the next big
sure.
hurdle once you've found the tech. But a couple of quick questions to finish off.
Yeah.
What's your favorite tech right now, or thing that you've spent money on recently?
Oh, the thing that I spent money on, that's probably not my favorite piece of tech at the moment. I have one of these remarkable things.
Oh, yeah.
Love it to bits. Love it, love it, love it. I used to go through notebooks like just ridiculous. Every conference I went to, I'd pick up notebooks because I knew that I was going to be using them. I went to then the Rocket Book, that erasable Rocket Book.
Mm-hmm.
And then about 2 years ago, maybe longer, I bought one of these Remarkables. And yeah, love it to bits. So like today, for example, I was on a newspaper feed and the article was really long. It's like, oh, I don't have time to do it. I'll just send it to my Remarkable. It wasn't a pressing article, but I can just send it through there and I can just read it on the Remarkable, like an e-reader.
That's so cool. Read it later.
Read it later.
I feel like I've only heard positive things about the Remarkable. And look, you might struggle with this one because I feel like it goes against you. Because you're always about recommending the right tech for the right firm. But what are your top, say, 3 to 5 apps right now? And you're not allowed to say contest now.
Microsoft Suite. Primarily because most firms completely overlook and underestimate its capabilities. They just go, oh, it just does. Excel, yeah, we know Excel. We're experts at Excel. Yeah, we write some stuff in Word and we've got Outlook. And occasionally we use Teams. The capabilities of that suite, the R&D that's been put into that suite is insane.
There's a ContestNet customer who've used Power Automate,
yep,
part of the Microsoft suite, to do some incredible stuff with the ContestNet API. Like, they've built these entire processes around ContestNet, all just part of the Microsoft suite. So
absolutely, yeah. You pay a little bit more per month, but the cost benefit out of all of it is just insane, and the some of the stuff is quite spectacular in that regard. The whole AI world is getting funkier. I'm loving stuff like Lovable, Beaver. Oh, there's another one that slipped to my mind. Tom Invertini writes it out of the US. Combinely, I think it is. Super clever shit.
What's something you're super excited about right now?
Well, it's 3 o'clock. It's Friday afternoon. It's super.
Such an L&M.
It's really it, you know.
Yeah.
What am I super excited about? Look, even just from a personal side of things, the next 12 months are going to be fantastic. There's so much cool stuff coming through. I'm not excited about some of the entrants in the practice management world. I'll be quite frank with that. But I think outside of that, where the firms really make their money, which is process and IP, that's where there's going to be some big stuff coming through. And that in the next 12 months, that's going to be quite cool.
Awesome. Alan, mate, this has been great. Where can people go? Where would you like them to go to connect with you, find out more?
Yep. Well, if LinkedIn is probably the quickest place to find me. It's pretty unmistakable head. So it's on there. So LinkedIn is probably the easiest. Practice Connections, spelled the way that you'd expect it to be spelled.
I'll link both of these up below wherever you're watching this, whether it's in the show notes for the podcast or in video. But yeah, Alan, mate, thank you so much.
Awesome, James. Thank you so much for having me.